President Trump's ban on travelers from 7 predominantly Muslim countries affects Iranians more than anyone. You've probably heard about Asghar Farhadi, nominated for Best Foreign Film and also Artist in Residence at the American Film Institute in Los Angeles. He's in Iran now, but says he won't attend the Oscars even if an exception is made. It's too risky. The Iranian government issued a counter ban on Americans traveling to Iran, which surprised many Americans who didn't know there was travel. Iranian-American journalists have been jailed in Iran. A 2016 poll found 3/4 of Americans don't like the country, many since the Islamic Revolution that overthrew the U.S.-installed Shah in 1979. But Iranians say there's a difference between their hardline government and their people, 35,000 of whom have non-immigrant U.S. visas. Kamen Mohammadi lives in London but visits Iran frequently. Her novel, The Cypress Tree, is a love letter to her country. She also co-authored The Lonely Planet Guide to Iran and joins us from the BBC studios in London. Kamen, what would you want Americans to know?
Well, Robin, that's a great question. I think the first thing that I would want Americans to know is, you know, we're not that different to you. The largest populations of Iranians outside of Iran are in the U.S., mm-hmm. I believe. And you know how, I mean, in Los Angeles, you know, it's called Teherangeles. And I met a British friend whose ex-husband is an Iranian guy who's now living in California. And when her kids go to visit him in L.A. in the summer, they come back and they think that in America they speak Farsi because they just go to this, you know, extremely Iranian part. So that immigration has gone on for many, many, many decades. So these are highly educated people. They hold great jobs. They contribute a lot to society. Iranians who are in Iran are not so different. You know, Iran has been probably the most progressive country in the Middle East. For example, our women got the vote in 1963, which is way ahead of a lot of our other sisters in the Middle East. Currently, something like 65% of university graduates are women. A third of the workforce in terms of teaching, the civil service, those kinds of jobs are held by women. So, you know, there are a lot more liberties and there's a lot more progress in Iran than we would imagine.
Well, you write, in fact, that women in Iran have more rights than they do in Saudi Arabia. But you also point out that Iran is also a country where a woman could be stoned to death for adultery or flogged for going out in public with a man she's not married to.
I know. There are these terrific contradictions which are about, you know, what's been enshrined in Sharia law, which was adopted. I mean, Sharia law always existed in Iran, but of course it became, you know, the regime's system after the revolution. So it's true, there are very heavily discriminatory laws against women. These things are terrible. There's no defense of that, but just to say that things like flogging and yes, there's not supposed to be mingling between the sexes. And in theory, you can be taken if you have incorrect, as they call it, hijab, you know, Islamic dress, that kind of thing. In practice, those things are extremely rare. So what we tend to hear about outside of the country is the one case, you know, where that does happen.
But this is the image that many Americans have of Iran. You fled the country with your family when you were a child during the revolution in the late 1970s. And that's when Americans of a certain generation formed their opinion. This was a country that donned black head coverings and yelled death to America, took Americans hostage, and regressed into this, you know, dark shadow of the Ayatollah. So where is that country? Is that country still there in pockets?
Do you know what, Robin? You're not wrong. And that absolutely was the image, you know, what was coming out of the country in 79, 80. And I know that the hostage crisis impressed a very bad image on American minds, completely understandably. That country which went behind the veil and shrouded everyone in black is still there, I suppose, but it's mostly there for the television cameras. So when you notice that there are demonstrations being shown where people are on the street punching the air, saying death to America, burning American flags, the people that tend to turn up to those demonstrations are pretty much regime people, or, you know, they're school kids given the day off school. They're staged. You know, any travelers to the country will be extremely shocked, actually, because that's just not at all what you see when you go there. You know, what you encounter, particularly when you land in Tehran, is a really throbbing metropolis. And it's very, very modern. And actually, so are the people and so are a lot of the attitudes. up because there is this dichotomy between real life and the regime and the law. You have life being lived on several levels at the same time.
And we've talked to Marzan Satrapi, the wonderful graphic artist. One of her comic graphic books, Persepolis, she talks about this dichotomy, that there's this historic wealth of the arts and education, but pockets of this darkness.
Yes, absolutely. And I think in a way, you know, with what's going on with all of us at the moment, we're beginning to understand how that can happen, you know, how you can have a sort of disconnect between actually things that are different points of view, very strong ideologies in your own country. And I think that that's very much what's kind of happened in Iran. And what we tend to see outside of the country is the negatives.
Well, there have been failed attempts at a popular uprising. And while the Iranian government has backed what are seen by the West as terrorist organizations, Hezbollah, for instance, we're only aware of one modern-day case of an Iranian perpetrating a terrorist act in the U.S. This was in 2006. It was actually a naturalized U.S. citizen who'd come to the U.S. when they were two, who drove his SUV into a crowd at the University of North Carolina, injuring many. But still, that's the one that we could find.
Thank you for pointing that out. And you know what? I've never come across much sort of support at all on the ground in Iran for the organizations that the regime gives money to. You know, Iranians see themselves as quite sophisticated people. As you mentioned, we have this extraordinarily long and rich history. You know, Iran is the longest occupied piece of land by a single race in the world.
Well, there's much to know, and it occurs as well that if people are highly vetted, and they have been in order to get these visas, these are professors and grad students that are highly vetted, it would seem that in keeping Iranians from coming to the U.S., it's keeping them from coming to what seems like a democracy that many of them yearn for.
Absolutely. And, you know, Iranians love America. And I've said this on, often in talks that I give in the U.S., which is that, you know, Iran and America, it's like a love story that's gone a little bit wrong. There's great taste for American products. You know, American popular culture is extremely popular. And as you say, the people who are coming over have been highly vetted and they're usually extremely highly educated. And Iran, you know, has the highest rate of brain drain in the world. A lot of those massive big brains are coming to America. So by stopping that from happening, America also misses out, you know.
Well, you are the co-author of The Lonely Planet Guide to Iran. And again, we should caution that Americans traveling in Iran were jailed after they were detained near the Iraqi border, which was considered a security issue. But if you're in the heart of Iran, what should you see?
Well, it's a huge country. Obviously, you're going to have to see Tehran because while Tehran isn't always beautiful, it's extremely vital and it's the burst of energy and modern sort of culture, Iranian culture going on there. The arts is incredible and really, really must be seen. You can't miss Isfahan. Isfahan is, in my opinion, the most gloriously beautiful place in the world. It was the capital of the Safavid dynasty and they made the most beautiful decorative arts and architecture. Shiraz has beautiful Persian gardens. There are nightingales and roses and you go mad with the smell of the orange blossom in the spring.
Okay, you got us. It might be a while, though. Does that hurt that there may now be this ban?
Yeah. You know what? I think so, because it's been coming up to 38 years that we have been waiting for things to normalize. I think that the best way for people to learn about each other is to meet and to visit each other's countries. So I think bans on any side are really unuseful.
What would you say to Americans who genuinely fear? Are they genuinely fearful?
You know, I respect that. I've given lectures in America and I've spoken to a lot of people about their concerns. So it's not something that I'd want to dismiss. But I think you have to look at the facts. You know, people who are scared, I would say, you know, go and read my book, for example, or someone else's about actually what the country's like, what the people are like. See if you could go to a Persian restaurant, meet some Iranian people. You know, I think the answer to fear, which we all have increasingly, is not to withdraw, but to really build those bridges, you know, to reach up outside of ourselves. And I think human to human contact is the most powerful thing.
That's Kamen Mohammadi, an Iranian-British journalist, co-author of The Lonely Planet Guide to Iran and author of the novel The Cypress Tree. We'll link you to her website at ours, herenow.org. Kamen, thank you.
Thank you so much, Robin. That was wonderful.